5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
And we welcome you back to another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobie. It is the forever 140-pound champion, Chris Algieri. Chris, how are you doing, my friend? I don't want to talk about the weather, but it's on my mind. I have my AC cranking. It's like 90 billion degrees in New York City. I see you're in the tank top. We're in the midst of the summer. We're in the midst of fight season. Everything is good in the boxing world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I see you got your fight season haircut going too.
Getting, short,
looking
a little
lean.
Shorter.
Yeah, I see it. Looking tight, high and tight.
That's what I'm trying to go for in the summer.
You look younger. You look like you.
Oh,
you
wow.
Cut off a few years.
Okay, I'll take that. I've cut off a few years, added a few inches to the biceps. Like I'm
go.
Feeling peak. I'm feeling like Shakur Stevenson on Twitter, which is like God mode.
God mode. Just, I mean, it's like he's got multiple arms to tweet. It's crazy. It's like nonstop.
Bro, we will get into it. I hope you're doing well. I know that you're in Tampa or the Plant City for Pro Box, so it never ends. We have some big fights this weekend. Boots Ennis is in action. It's going to be a free-flowing type of episode today. We have a few topics that I want to hit on, some fights that I want to preview, and it is all presented by PPV.com. Go ahead and order Jake Paul versus Mike Perry, which is fastly approaching. I will be there in Tampa for that fight on behalf of PPV.com. I will be hosting the live chat, so join us in the live chat. I enjoyed everyone that was in there for Masvidal Diaz. It was a grand old time. We're going to be doing it again on July 20th. No subscriptions. You can stream it to your phone, tablet, any device. PPV.com is our presenting sponsor, and they are great, great partners. I guess we could start with Shakur. I'm about to fall asleep on Monday night, and I see him just tweeting at you. Like, you somehow got into the 300-plus tweets from Shakur over the last – since Saturday. I counted them. And two of which were directed at you for some reason. I don't know why, because we do nothing but praise him. But what was your, like, reaction to that? Because we even haven't talked about it. Like, that shit was weird.
Yeah, I had a couple of people reach out to me, like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? I'm like, well, first of all, I don't care. First of all, I don't care. Second of all, I'm not on Twitter. It's not affecting my sleep. I just completely misdirected. Especially as someone, like you said, we praise him on this show all the time. We predict him to beat everybody in those weight classes, and I've said that for a long time. I don't know. I don't know where it came from. He probably saw some kind of clip out of context and then just went to he chose violence on Twitter. We'll put it that way. But in terms of what he cares and thinks about me, I don't care at all.
I went and counted 237 tweets as of Tuesday, midday. He's probably fired off 50 more. We're talking 300 tweets, which is elite level shit posting.
Yeah.
This is after a win. This is after a dominant win.
But he does this though after fights because he gets a lot of
heat. But this is next level.
Win or lose, he tends to get a lot of heat. And I think this one now, you know, this one's a little different because it's the post Top Rank contract deal and everyone's kind of wondering what's next. It's shit stressful. Listen, after fights is tough, man. I used to have a big problem after fights, win or lose. You know, the come down's tough. You're Superman on Saturday night and then on Monday morning, you're like, I'm kind of a regular guy right now until I have something else on the calendar.
How about going to the beach? How about going on a vacation? How about spending time with your family? To send 300 tweets. Like, I'm a tweeter. I tweet myself, and I've kind of slowed it down over the last, like, year because I think the platform sucks. 300 tweets means you are sitting there on your couch, and you are just going at everyone. He's going at Mace. He's going at Cameron. There are two people in this world that I would never wish to get into an online beef with. One of them is 50 Cent, and the other is Mace or Cameron. I put them together because they have a show now. Those guys are legendary shit talkers. Those guys will hold grudges, especially 50 Cent will hold grudges for decades. They are roasting Shakur because Shakur, anyone that tweets at Shakur, anyone that has anything to say, he's just firing back. Somehow you got into the mix. it, which is hilarious because we put out an episode that day, and I love our faithful, I love our faithful listeners, because when he tweeted that about you, the responses were overwhelming. Like, bro, like they just put out a video today where they picked you to beat Tank or could beat Tank. Like, Chris does nothing but praise you. They're, you know, Inside Boxing Live is one of the only shows that actually goes out of their way to give you a fair and honest assessment. What I could possibly think that he took any offense to is what you said about B. Purnell Whitaker. Like, don't say you're going to knock someone out because then you're just going to make yourself look bad. That's not – that's constructive criticism. That is not shitting on him like some of these other guys do, saying, I fell asleep, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, making a comparison to the great Purnell Whitaker is the last thing.
How dare you, Chris?
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, it's Purnell Whitaker. It's one of the greatest defensive fighters who's ever lived. And he, you know, and I said, like, he was pound for pound for years in the mid 90s. I know a lot of you know, newer fans of the sport or younger fans may not remember those times. We and you do. Purnell Whitaker was the man. And I've talked about his skill set ad nauseum on both here and Pro Box. You know, I've always picked him to be the guy to beat at these weight classes. He just doesn't get the shot. But yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. People get sensitive after fights. Like I said, after fights is tough, man. There's a lot of pressures to be, you know, like I said, you're Superman on Saturday, and then you're kind of like a regular guy who actually tweets. Superman doesn't tweet. Superman's busy, you know, saving lives. And when you're fighting, you don't have time to tweet like that either. So a lot of time on your hands after a fight.
Yes, a lot. That's the issue. That's like the broader conversation I want to have. Like, this doesn't change my thoughts on Shakur at all. It's not going to change my thoughts on him as an exceptional boxer. It doesn't change my thoughts that on the right night he could beat Tank, he could beat Haney, he could beat Teofimo.
He can beat everybody. Doesn't change. No.
Like, I just think he's making himself look foolish, and it just plays right into what you said before the fight or right after the fight. Like, he's not doing himself any favors with the tweeting. I understand it's just tweets, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really mean much in the grand scheme of things. It's just Twitter. It's literally – these tweets mean nothing. But after time, you build a reputation. Like, he has Twitterson on his trunks. Like, he's taken to a whole other level. Yes, it's because of this post-ESPN, post-Top Rank. He says, I'm going after everyone. I'm just going to ether everyone. But where is his management team? Like, this is a guy that ESPN and Top Rank and even himself has lauded. Oh, I got the best team. I got Terrence Crawford. I got Andre Ward, who wouldn't even call my fights because he's my manager. You know, I got these great – I got Jay Prince. And yet no one can tell him, like, hey, maybe, like, tone it down a little bit. Like, I know it's just Twitter, but you're not doing yourself any favor. Like, a PR lesson. This goes for a lot of boxers. Shakur, I mean, he's not Ryan Garcia. Like, Ryan Garcia needs serious help. I just think Shakur, who has an unbelievable team around him, I'm just a little surprised that no one would say, like, hey, let's switch it up a little bit. Let's change up your persona here, because Twitterson is not a good one. It's not going to change you in the ring, but it does. Like, if you're going to piss off fans, you're going to piss off the buying public. This isn't like any other sport. This is a sport where you need fans to buy your fights, especially in pay-per-view era. And you're going to piss them off. You're going to start going after the fans, for especially if they don't like your style. I just think it's really going to bite him in the ass in the long run when it comes to money. Not him in the ring. When it comes to money.
Yeah, maybe. Because we do live in this era now where guys can take to Twitter. You know, we're seeing that. And you mentioned a slew of these young guys, the Teofimo, Ryan Garcia, you know, because they have their own outside of the ring personas. And a lot of time it shows itself on social media. We're in the social media age. You know, we have access to be able to talk directly to fans. And guys are taking that liberty. And Shakur is one of those guys. And it's almost, I don't know how much this is like on purpose in terms of, you know, becoming the heel where now he can go fight these guys and fight people in the comments. But at the end of the day, it may not affect him because he can, like we just said, he has the ability to beat everybody. If he goes out there and he just beats everyone, you can't deny him. And you turn into Floyd in the later years where people want to see you get beat. But if you just keep winning, it doesn't really matter. And Floyd made the most money of anybody in the world. So you're talking about the money. Yeah, he might be hurting on money in terms of opportunities right now. And it seems like, I think Teofimo's kind of in that situation as well. But they're both so damn good. As long as they are able to get the fights, which is proving difficult for both of them, to get the biggest fights possible. That's why we see Teofimo calling everyone out. Shakur's always called everybody out. But getting those guys into the ring with you is the issue. Because I think once they do, and then you win, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the people think about you. If you beat everybody, you know, if you beat, if Shakur goes out there and beats your favorite fighter, even though you're rooting against Shakur, it doesn't matter. He beat your guy. So it may affect him right now, but I think in the long run, as long as he keeps winning, it's not going to matter.
I kind of agree with you, Betty. I kind of agree because, like, we're opening
just
our
beat everybody.
Our show talking about this. The talk has been Shakur. I think he looked at what Ryan Garcia did, and he's like, all right, I'll flood social media with shit. It's not as crazy as Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia is in a whole nother level of disgusting. Yeah. Like, he's now baby mama drama, like some real disturbing videos between him and the mother of his children. Like, he is in a whole nother level of needs help. But there is a media strategy in the social media world where you can keep yourself in the discussion. You can keep yourself – how important is it to stay in the discussion after a win? Like you just talked about, like on Monday, you're no longer Chris Algieri the fighter. You're Chris Algieri, just regular guy on the street.
Dude.
Dude. You're a dude walking around Huntington. But you need to stay in the limelight, especially in boxing. So Shakur, and he's building off of a blueprint that we've seen with Mayweather, not just in the ring, just like being hated. And he's talking to Mayweather. He's talking about signing with Mayweather Promotions. He's talking about potential signing with Matchroom. That's an interesting. We're talking about him. We're talking about him, and it's working because it also was one of the highest rated ESPN telecasts of the year.
That's
he has some of the highest ratings on ESPN, which I'm not going to sit there and take that away from. That's awesome. Like, I'm rooting for this kid. I'm rooting for viewership. I'm rooting for all of this. This is what we do. But that right there is a good thing. But then he tweets that he says that ESPN or someone paid fans to walk out of the arena, and then they were all in cahoots to show that. That's when we're like have too much access to these guys, when they're just free flowing with these tweets, and he's talking about everyone's out to get me. He actually credited Adrian Broner's PR last night. That's when I was like, wow, this guy's completely lost the fucking whole script. When he was crediting Adrian Broner and how he created his career. Adrian Broner never had a sponsorship and left so much money on the table.
Well, the news minute is becoming more and more of a minute. So these guys got to stay up to date and, you know, putting your name, good press, bad press, it doesn't matter. It's all press. And you got, like we said, we're talking about it right now. So obviously there is a method to the madness. And he's not quite as mad as like a guy like Ryan Garcia is. Yeah, he's staying out there. And especially right now though, for Shakur, because he is quote unquote a free agent, whether there's a new deal in place or not that we don't know about. You know, so it's very, I'm very curious to see where he's going to go from here, because listen, he needs to be able to fight all of these guys. And it's just, it's weird with the situation that he's in terms of promotional arms, where he's going to go. But yeah, welcome to social media boxing, baby.
Oh my
this
God,
is,
this
bro. Is the world we live in, buddy.
It's insane. Like, there's the Ryan Garcia whole drama. And it's more than just drama. It's disgusting. He's in a whole class by himself.
Yeah.
There's the Shakur, who is just very sensitive and will tweet 300 times in a 48-hour span. There's Teofimo, who is looking kind of normal. He's looking kind of sane compared to those guys who, in his own right, has said some crazy shit on Instagram and Twitter and is in his own right a kind of nuts. I think it's like, obviously I'm a big proponent of social media. It's how I make a living and it's gotten me some really cool things, but it's such a bad thing for boxers. I think it's a gift and it's a curse. And you could speak on this. Like, fighters have a lot of time on their hands. Mm-hmm. The guys that we're talking about have a lot of money. They have a lot of money and a lot of time in their hands, and they have Twitter and they have social media. And that's a big recipe for disaster. But I also think, like, it's not just this era. If Twitter was around, social media was around in the 80s, right? Everyone likes to go back to the 80s as this like pure and the best time ever, best for fighting the best. And these were real men. Like, you're not telling me that Sugar Ray Leonard, at the height of his powers, who was arguably like top five most famous person in the USA, not just athlete, with all the money he was commanding and all the power he had leverage wise and contracts, wouldn't be pulling these stunts too? Wouldn't be doing crazy stuff?
He was also a wild man outside of the
nuts.
Ring.
Crazy.
Yeah, he was a wild guy. And, you know, there's plenty of behind the scenes reports about what the kind of things that Sugar was doing when he was not in the gym training or was not getting ready for a fight. Yeah, you're probably right. And then, you know, what about a guy like James Toney? You know, James Toney, who, oh man, super aggressive in interviews and would come, like, if he had social media, you know, would it be any different? I think you're right, Dan. I think it's just the times. I came out like during my career when I was a budding, you know, prospect. That's when social media kind of first came on the scene. And I remember using Facebook mm-hmm. events to sell tickets for my fights. And it was a very positive thing for me using social media. I got on it pretty early as more of an entrepreneur. It's changed now. These guys, especially the guys you just mentioned who have so much money, they're not worried about selling tickets as much as they are about just getting eyes. And listen, social media is a good way to do it.
Yeah, bro.
People get paid millions of dollars just to live on social media. So, you know, there's money out there.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys, like the 90s guys, I think before social media, pre-internet, but we still had access to them. Was probably the best, like, medium. Well,
look at Oscar now, even. Oscar's a promoter. He's like, he's on social media like
he's
crazy.
Putting his fake abs out there. He's on That's his awesome. House in Vegas. Like, but my, like, what I'm trying to get at is, like, in the 90s or even in the late 80s, early 90s, early 2000s, that like 15 to 20 year stretch, I think it was like the perfect time in terms of we didn't know too much about these guys, but we knew enough. Like, we had we had Ring yeah. magazine, an actual magazine. We had HBO. Those 5-minute vignettes that were so awesome before the fight. Like, we knew just enough.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how crazy. Like, I knew from my dad telling me, like, how crazy these guys are and, like, him being on the road with Sugar Ray Leonard or being on the road with James Toney or being on the road with all these guys.
Bob was also a super stud himself and was out.
Bob was running around with Sugar Ray Leonard.
With the dude, like, yeah.
He was part of his entourage.
Yeah, he was one, like, of the bros.
A fun little nugget he told me. Yeah, I was part of Ray Leonard's entourage in the 80s. I was like, oh, okay.
That's cool. you've seen some things.
I have to unpack that one day.
You got some stories that I'm never going to hear.
never going to hear those.
No.
I just think we just know too much about these guys now. I think they have too much. We have too much access to them. And
anonymity,
you don't want access
is gone.
To their friends.
Anonymity is gone, right? So, and that was one of the things I was always worried about, like, when, you know, I became champion was, you know, there was ESPN was coming to my house and, you know, HBO, and then, you know, people recognizing me in New York City streets when I'm, you know, getting out of a cab kind of thing. I hated that. I never wanted to be, you know, famous, and I always wanted to stay anonymous, and it's impossible now. And not only are these guys superstar athletes and world champions that everyone tunes in to see when they fight, but they're also accessible all the time. And you get a real deep insight into these guys because they are literally tweeting from their brain to the world, and that was never an option before, and now it is. There's so much access to athletes now.
Yeah, I think there's a good way to do it, and there's a bad way to do it. Like, well, virtual.
I'm going to go to a different way, a different sport. Look at Messi. Messi is a very closed in person, and
he's like a brand, though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I mean. That there's other ways to go about it. You don't have to just completely gush and put yourself out there, like a la Ryan Garcia. You can still be a guy kind of in the shadows. Ronaldo's another one. And I'm talking about the highest paid athletes in the world, you know, and a lot of times boxers are. But yeah, you don't have to be completely out there.
I think a lot of that is like the team aspect, too. Those guys are brands in their own way. Like these guys, they're with one name and it's one guy, but they're also part of a team. Like, you don't see professional athletes in the NBA, NFL, for the most part, tweeting like some of these boxers do. Boxing, yeah. It's a one-man show. It's mm-hmm. you against the world. You have a team. Like, you have your trainer, your coaches, your managers, and all that. But it's very clear that they mean literally nothing. Like, a lot of those guys are along for the ride. A lot of those guys don't want to piss off the guy that's giving them, that's paying them. I'm not saying that's Andre Ward, because he has his own money, and Jay Prince has done phenomenal things with a lot of boxers. I'm just curious what they're saying to Shakur. Maybe it's part of a master plan. I think it. I don't know. I think it's a little bit of this new age now, social media. But guys like Jerron Ennis, who we're about to talk about, or like Virgil Ortiz, they don't tweet. Like, if they do, it's like very minimal. It's like Boots Ennis will tweet, tell you how many rounds he sparred today. Oh, I just sparred today, all jabs. Now I'm going to church. Like, okay. Virgil Ortiz, I just learned the guitar
in
my
room.
He's funny.
He's actually Virgil's actually pretty funny.
He's like, I'm playing Halo in my room and I just learned a new guitar riff. I'm like, and Ryan Garcia makes fun of him for that, which I actually thought was kind of a funny tweet from Ryan Garcia.
There's Ryan's funny too, though. Ryan puts out some really funny stuff as well.
He tweeted that Virgil Ortiz and was like, "Stay in your room and keep jacking off." And I honestly burst out laughing because I was like, "That's such a fucked up thing to say." It's like Virgil Ortiz just seems like a nice kid. He probably has a girlfriend or definitely has girls. And like Ryan Garcia is on some private jet and he's making fun of Virgil Ortiz, who seems like a little bit of an introvert. It's just funny that we can see all this. It's a gift and a curse. I understand you need it, especially to build up a fan base and have people have interest in your fights in order to buy them. No one's buying Shakur's fights, I don't think, off of him in the ring because they just don't like his style. But matched up with the right guy, which is what's the most important thing.
Well, that's another thing that's funny about it is I actually do like his style. So it's funny that I was in the crosshairs for that because I actually do. I'm a boxing purist. I like watching boxers. I like guys who have great defense and good, judge of distance. I think he's the master of distance. Him and Dmitry Bivol, I think, are the two best experts when it comes to, judging range and distance. So I like watching those kinds of guys. Even Bivol, people complain about Bivol's style. Like, I love the way Bivol fights, but what are you going to do?
And they're two of the best. They're number one and number two in defensive metrics. And
right.
It's just funny that you actually like that style. You love that style. Like, you love his style, but he still came out. It's just, he's a little delusional right now. And I think he'll step away and realize that. And I'm very proud of our listeners for coming to your defense and coming to the show's
defense. Appreciate you guys.
It's awesome. Like, I was really like, everyone was like, what are you talking about? Like, there are guys that actually criticize you, like Steve Kim. And like, those guys are relentless on you. They get personal with you. We'll never do that. No. Like, I will never get personal with any of these guys. Like, we'll talk about what happens in the ring. But if you're going to bring up, your name, you're going to bring up our show, then we'll have to address it. But it's not going to change our thoughts on what we think of you inside the ring. Let's get to boxing. Let's get to some fights. Boots Ennis returns. Yes. The Boots Ennis, this could be the start of something big. This could be the start of a Boots Ennis takeover of the sport. And that's not crazy to say. He has that much skill. He has that much talent. He's with Matchroom. He's with Eddie Hearn. He has a 10,000-plus arena sold, not sold out, but 10,000-plus tickets sold in Philly, homecoming. Supposed to be Cody Crawley, but it's David Evanesian. Crawley had an eye injury. Boots is a huge favorite in this fight. We're talking minus 1,800 favorite. He should be able to stop Evanesian whenever he wants. But this is more of like, to me, is the beginning of something that could be huge in the sport of boxing. That's Boots Ennis becoming more of a household name.
Yeah, Boots is the man. And people who know boxing have been talking about him for a very long time. So, and it's been very unfortunate that he has been kind of left to the wayside for a number of years and missed a lot of good years and good opportunity to get to a point where he could actually fight a guy like Terrence Crawford. Like, he got turned down because he just wasn't well known enough, and that's not really his fault. It was because he was not able to get the opportunities. Hopefully now with the Matchroom, he's got a power broker now to be able to get him, big fights, to bring him home, to have a homecoming. I love homecomings. I love when you can take a fighter and bring them to their base, bring them to their people, because that matters. And Philly, dude, I mean, they're not really known for having like great arenas where they put on the big fights, but everyone knows about the Philly boxing style. Everybody knows about Philly boxing wars in the gyms. And everybody knows that Philly fans, you think of the Eagles fans, are rabid. So now you bring Jerron Ennis home, who is a super talent, one of the best fighters in the world today, and you put that fan base behind him. I think you're right. I think there's an opportunity here for this to be literally a Jerron Ennis wave for the next couple of years.
We need it. We need it terribly. Boxing does have its stars. I think we're in a great spot. But like you said on a previous episode, like, a lot of the guys are in their mid-30s. A lot of guys are in their early 30s.
We're in a transition.
Right. And Boots Ennis, he's not the most talkative guy, but it's fine. He's got his mouthpiece in Eddie Hearn. He lets his skills do the talking. Like, we're talking about a guy that is compared to Roy Jones in terms of his style. Like, I don't like doing that comparison. Ability. I don't like doing that compared, but style. Like, he's so free flowing. He changes stances. He'll do stuff in there that you're like, we won't see too often. I'm just excited to see him in there. It's his first fight in over a year. His last fight was against Roman Villa. He stopped him in July of 2023. He is the IBF champion at welterweight. The welterweight picture right now, this isn't your father's welterweight division. It's very interesting, and I'm curious how Boots Ennis, if he will stay here and become a disputed, or he'll go to 154, because Ennis is the champ at IBF. Mario Barrios is a WBC champion. Brian Norman Jr. is the WBO interim champion. Emanis Stanionis is the WBA regular champion. Terrence Crawford still technically holds a few belts, but he is gone from this division. He's up at 154. So I'll ask you, Chris, Boots Ennis, is he going to stay at 147 where he could reign over this division, or is he going to go up to 154, which is now a money division in boxing that has a lot of stars?
I would like to see him unify welterweight, and there's a bunch of good guys for him to fight with that I think would make interesting matchups. But I don't know physically if how long he can stay there. He's huge for 147. One thing about being with Matchroom is you now have access to an entire media arm, which is going to pumping out videos. They're putting them out there. They're doing these vignettes, which is awesome. It's got an old school touch to what boxing used to be in the 90s and the HBO era. So Matchroom still does that. He's a big welterweight, man. And I don't know how long he's going to be able to stay there. I don't know how long he's going to be able to perform the way he performs at that weight. But as long as he can be there, I'd like to see him, you know, take over that division, unify, then move up, look for those big money fights. But he's been on the outside looking in for a long time. He may want to just go right to the big fights, which I understand.
I could see him fighting Stanionis.
I like that.
That would be a nice fight. I can see him fighting all these guys. These are all makeable fights now. The Barrios maybe is a little tricky because Barrios is flirting with Pacquiao. Barrios is very much aligned with PBC still. He doesn't have to be undisputed at 147. There's no reason to stay around because that takes time. That takes like a 2 year. That's a 2 year process. It's an 18 month to 2 year process to become undisputed. Do you really have to do that at 147 where none of these are exactly huge fights? They're fun fights. Brian Norman Jr., relatively unknown, still a slobber knocker type of fight between him and Ennis. Barrios, very winnable fight for him. Stanionis seems like an awesome fight. I think that they could maybe potentially make that next. And then 154. I mean, the sky's the limit at 154. There's Terrence Crawford there. There's Sebastian Fundora. There's Virgil Ortiz. There's Boachuk. There's endless names. It's one of the richest divisions right now in terms of names, talent, and bigger names too, like big fights. I'm very interested to see what he does. I'm just happy he's back. Like a 154 move would not shock me at all. Like I think he was very stubborn at staying in 147 and really wanting that Crawford fight. And I think no one suffered more besides the fans, no one suffered more during Crawford Spence saga than Boots Ennis.
Yes.
Clearly number three, clearly just waiting. And it took freaking 2 years for them to fight, more than 2 years, but the fight and the fallout was a 2 year process. And now he's at 147. Like, do you think he'll go to 154? I would not be shocked.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like I said, he's been on the outside looking in, and that's where the money fights are. You mentioned all those guys at welterweight. None of them are like, they don't move the needle for, you know, non boxing guys like us, you know, like, yeah, the Bohochek fight. That sounds, I'm sorry.
Stanionis.
The Stanionis fight. Yeah. We love that fight, but do fans, you know, really know who Stanionis is? Cause Stanionis kind of is now known as the guy that fell out with Virgil, you know, over and over and over again. Yeah. So, you know, that poor guy has been left out as well. So it's kind of like a fight between two guys who've been left out, who are very, very good, mind you. But yeah, there's all those big names. 54 is like a big division now, which oftentimes was a kind of a leapfrog division between welter and middle. Now it's like the hot division.
Well, yeah, because no one's at 160 and no one's at 147. So 54 right now has Jermell Charlo, Sebastian Fundora, Tim Zhu, Madrimov, Boachuk, Lubin, Ramos, Crawford, Spence, Brian Mendoza, Charles Conwell, Murtaz Yelev, who's a champion. We're not going to forget you, my friend. There's a lot of names at 154. I just think, like, now's the time. How old is Ennis?
I think he's still pretty young. He's in his late 20s, 27?
I'm actually going to look this up. Like, I always just add on ages. I give you, like, a 2-8. He's 27, 28. Let's see. Jerron Ennis. I'm looking him up on BoxRec right now.
They don't have his age on BoxRec.
Why don't they put ages on BoxRec?
Some people they do. Sometimes they do.
No, now I'm determined to find his age. I'm going to the CompuBox notes.
It says 27 when I just Googled it.
27.
June 26, 1997.
Prime. This guy is prime to be a force in boxing. He's got the feel. He's got the look. He may not have the skills on the mic, but it'll be refreshing. Considering our first segment of the show with these lunatic fighters, I think it'd be refreshing to have a guy that just really focused on boxing and his skills. I think he could benefit off of that. He's got Eddie Hearn.
He could be like a, you know, just like a, just like a throwback to the old guys, like just tough, just, you know, like a haggler, just mean. Just go out there and get it done.
I think there's room for that. I think there's room for that, and it helps to have Eddie Hearn as your promoter to kind of just be that guy to hype you up nonstop. Shakur Stevenson will be in attendance at this fight. That's interesting because Hearn is making a really big push to sign him. But I'm ready for Ennis. Like, I know this isn't the opponent that we wanted. Crawley would have been a slightly better fight. Evanescian, I just, you know, people remember him getting absolutely stopped by Crawford. The betting odds will dictate a very, very wide endings here. Ennis by KO, minus 650. I haven't seen a KO odds like that in quite a while. Ennis by decision, if you think it will go decision, is plus 500. Like, I don't see this fight going distance. This fight
This fight's basically a litmus test to compare Crawford and Ennis.
True.
You don't think Ennis is going to go out there to try and stop him before Crawford did, and then they have a talking point?
Yeah. I mean, that's matchmaking 101. Yep. That's what and I love it that you're right. I love that it's a hometown fight. Matchroom is really good at that. Matchroom understands the hometown aspect. They're willing to take it on the road. They don't do every fight in Vegas. They don't do every fight in some casino. They'll go to these hometowns, and they could potentially build Ennis up in Philly, and then AC is always right there. AC was our playground as kids.
Yeah. Every big AC fight, I was taking that ride for Long Island.
Nothing better. I got chills. Just got chills because me and my boys, it started off going as a kid. Like, I went as a kid, like, literally to, like, Foreman fights when he fought there. And Tyson, Holyfield, my dad would take me and my brothers, and we wouldn't actually go to the fight because we were too young, but, like, we would be there for the ride, and I would remember it. And then we got a little bit older, and I started going to Gotti fights when I was, like, 14, went to his last fight there, was able to talk to him before the fight, which is probably one of my greatest memories in the boxing world. But then we got a little bit old after age 21 when we would go for a weekend with my friends, and like we would do the whole HBO tour with the big HBO fights there. Remember going to Hopkins versus Pavlik when Hopkins beat Pavlik in 2008. Yep. We drove from West Virginia. This is when I was going to WVU. Four of my friends got in the car. We drove 10 hours from West Virginia to Atlantic City to watch Hopkins Pavlik. But it was amazing because it's AC, like it's miniature. This is pre-recession AC, which AC is kind of bleak right now.
Yeah.
What happened? I mean,
COVID killed it. It was, you know, COVID was like the nail in the coffin. But I think they've been coming back a little bit. I haven't been back since COVID, but I know people are going. It'd be so great if there was a resurgence for fights there. The problem with AC is the airports. The only way to really get in there is to drive. You know, and that's you know, so you got those Philly fans, you got the New York fans, even the Midwest guys. People come from the Midwest to watch, to go to AC. That's why Kelly Pavlik was fighting there, because those people would make that Ohio trip.
Ohio, and then Philly would meet in the middle in AC. You make a weekend.
It's a driving town.
Yeah, I mean, I have such great memories there, and it has fallen on hard times. I was there last summer and the summer before, not for boxing, but for like a John Boyd Media. They wanted me to like walk around the boardwalk and talk to bettors. Talk about bleak, man. That was like the worst. Trying to find a few people to talk to on the boardwalk, but
yeah, I hope you had a knife on you or something.
I had a shank on me. I've been to a few, like MMA. They were doing a lot of MMA shows at Ocean Resort. PFL was doing stuff there, but that's not it. Like Boardwalk Hall, Saturday night, Jim Lampley opening up an HBO telecast over the high shot of the ocean and that's over right there. Like my memories as a kid. Do you ever fight in AC?
Not in
kickboxing.
Kickboxing. I did kickboxing. I fought there a few times. I won one of my world titles in AC in kickboxing.
Yeah. Tropicana.
Actually, the Tropicana. Yeah.
Oh man. Those were fun.
So I fought, I won a world title in AC, and it was my last kickboxing fight. And then like 6 months later, not even, I made my pro boxing debut and, not in AC. And then we went down to AC, I guess, to watch a fight. And I actually hung out with Vinny Paz and Arturo Gatti because the club manager was at my kickboxing fight. So he's like, oh, man, come on in. Anytime you're down here, let me know. And I was like, oh, we're coming down. And he's like, all right, I got to the champs table. And it was like Vinny Paz was there. I was like, whoa, hanging out with Vinny Paz. He's telling me all these crazy things. He's a wild man. And then Arturo comes in. And I was just like, whoa, I was 1-0.
Vinny Pazienza and Arturo Gatti.
Yeah, Vinny Pazienzo,
That's like dream blunt Arturo rotation.
Gatti and Chris Algieri 1-0. You know,
three Italians,
three Guineas causing a ruckus in AC.
Yeah, but there's the endless possibilities for Jerron Ennis as a boxing takeover, potentially maybe bringing fights to Atlantic City. I mean, that's very far down the list, but I'm excited to watch him fight this weekend. That's the biggest fight on the weekend. Who else is on that card? No, Sky Nicholson is fighting. She's a champ, and she has been calling out Amanda Serrano nonstop. I'm pulling up the fight schedule now. It's the biggest fight of the weekend is the Boots fight. Chocolatito.
I was going to say, there are some good fights.
So Chocolatito is not on this card, but Chocolatito is fighting on Friday on ESPN Plus. I will watch that.
Come back.
Peter Dobson versus Jaleel Hackett. Sky Nicholson.
I've heard
versus
a lot about this, about Hackett, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard good things about him.
Khalil Cole is fighting light heavyweight. Henry LeBron, the guy that I was calling last week. Not Luis LeBron. Henry LeBron is fighting Christopher Diaz.
He's been on a nice run. That's an interesting fight with Chris Diaz. Chris Diaz is always in good fights. He's always fun to watch. I'm not mad about that fight.
Yeah, this is isn't the strongest card, but it's got Boots on it. It's middle of July. The bigger fights are coming up. There's also Janabek.
There's an ESPN fight. I'm looking at it right now. Janabek is got a unification fight.
Yeah, he's fighting Andrei Milo. I don't know how to say it. Raymond Morataya, who is a lightweight
fighting Tevin
man.
Farmer. Speaking of Philly, Tevin Farmer. Tevin Farmer back from the dead.
Wow. Ruben Villa, who I like.
Ruben Villa is good.
I didn't even
fighting Sagawa. Sagawa's tough.
Top rank. I didn't even know this card was happening this weekend. That's just the.
Well, it's Janabek, man. Janabek's tough. Yo, have you seen Jonathan Lopez?
How do you promote this guy? No.
Jonathan Lopez is he trains down here and he's excellent.
Worth watching.
Worth watching for sure.
Nice.
For sure. 21 years old, 15-0, 11 KOs.
Nice.
He's an Orlando guy. He could fight. He could really fight.
Nice. I will keep an eye on him, and everyone out there should keep an eye on him because we got to start looking for like what's next. Like that's kind of a blind spot for me is like trying to – people ask me, who's next? Who's upcoming? And I'm always like, all right, Abdullah Mason. He's already there. He's already here. Yeah. Like Bruce Carrington, he's 27. Like – Where are the real like the diamonds in the rough, the real prospects, mm-hmm. and that's someone to keep an eye on. Let's move over to a fight that was announced that also kind of fell between the cracks. Virgil Ortiz is fighting Sergey Bochuk on August 10th in Las Vegas. Virgil Ortiz was supposed to fight Tim Zhu. That fight fell out. I think they will still fight this year. But Virgil, I love this. Could have taken a light touch. Could have taken a tune-up. Even though the last three fights for him have been tune-ups. Sergey Bochuk is legit. I mean, this guy has a 97% knockout rate. Just came off of that Mendoza win. He went the distance for the first time. I love this fight. I don't see how this fight can be boring. This is a shootout of the highest order at 154, which is a great division. Virgil Ortiz, Sergey Bochuk.
It's a bombs away fight. I mean, both these guys, 100% knockout KO rating for Virgil Ortiz. I think he's 21 knockouts. Like you said, Bochuk has only been the distance once with a very, very capable and super tough Brian Mendoza. He was impressive in that fight. Bochuk's good, man. And this is Virgil's first real junior middleweight. Bochuk's big. He's tall. He's 6 foot tall. He's got big power. You know, he's physical. This is really going to be eye-opening, I believe, for what Virgil can do at 154. Is he going to be able to blast guys out the way he did at 47? Is he going to be that monster that he was, you know, 7 pounds lighter? We don't know. I mean, Bochuk is a tough fight. And I love Virgil's mentality. He just wants the toughest fights out there. They're willing to fight anybody. They're not ducking anybody. They will fight everybody, anybody. It doesn't matter how long he's had off. Doesn't matter when the last time he fought was. Like, yeah, give me the toughest guys. Unfortunately, his last couple of fights, he fought no hopers, but Bochuk ain't that.
No, yeah, he has two rounds since 2022. So the criticism or the doubt from fans doesn't come from his ability in the ring. It comes from him, his health. It comes from him being able to put together training camps. Obviously, 147, it just didn't work. He legitimately had to go to the hospital. He had that crazy disease. The last couple of fights were at 156 and 156, but a lot of someone pointed that out to me. It's when it's not a title fight, there's 2 or 3 pounds of wiggle room. They come up with an agreement. But if, this is a interim title fight. So this is you're right. This is his first real fight at 154. And it's a tough.
But I mean, also fighting a guy who was a 54 pounder because he was fighting blown up welterweights before.
Yes, this is a real test, and I'm a little shocked that he's taking this with the Zoo fight coming up. Like maybe the Zoo fight doesn't happen. Maybe that was just who knows. But I think he wants to go the route of collecting the belts or going the belt route. And Boachuk picked up an interim belt when he beat Mendoza. Went the distance with Mendoza. 98% KO rate between the two of them. Virgil is 100%, and Boachuk is 23 of 24. I love that. I love it. This is going to be a – I favor Virgil, but
– I do too.
Once again, it's just the 2 rounds in 2 years is always going to be there, and there's always going to be the butt with him until he gets to a groove. And we're talking about Boots getting into a groove and becoming a force. Virgil Ortiz, this is his chance right now to get some momentum and fight 3 times next year, fight again this year. Like, be that guy in boxing, too, because he has everything, too. Like, he has the style that fans will love.
He's a nonstop puncher, and he gets knockouts. I mean, he's got a great left hook. He's got great hand positioning. He gets hit sometimes, too, especially early on. You talk about getting in the groove. When he's not in his groove, he actually does get touched, and then he just breaks you down, and then he falls into his good defense where his hands are in good position. I watched the Boachuk when he got lost to Brandon Adams. And Brandon Adams is a tough, tough guy, super tough guy, tricky, good puncher. And Boachuk was winning that fight, was looking good, and he just got clipped with a left hook. And once I saw that, I was like, Virgil Ortiz's left hook is something gnarly, you know, but the body shot and the head shot. So I think it would be a safe bet to lean for Virgil Ortiz by KO, especially because Boachuk has been stopped before. But I don't know. I think early on, this fight's going to be a shootout, like you said.
Has Boachuk been stopped?
Yeah, Brandon Adams knocked him out in the 8th round.
Really?
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. No. Now, it was a bunch of fights ago. I think he's 6-0 with 5 KOs since then.
Oh, he's 24-1. You're right.
Yeah, he's got.
Was that on? I think that was a
Ring City. Yeah, I watched it yesterday.
Ring City. How about that? I love that fight. I don't think DraftKings has odds on it yet. They should because it's an official. It's made official. Let's see. I'm looking at the DraftKings app right now. Don't see it on there. They have Dubois Joshua minus 550. They have Usyk Fury 2. They have Usyk as a minus 175 favorite. If you want to hop on that right now, or if you think Fury is going to win, you can get Fury at plus 140. That's actually like I might take that real quick.
I think the Joshua Dubois fight is a good fight to bet on because listen, they're heavyweights, man, and
Dubois plus 380 can punch.
Dubois can punch, and you know Joshua
hot
has.
Dog.
We've seen Joshua's chin fail him in the past. You know, is it inconceivable that Dubois could get to that chin? No,
it's freaking heavyweights.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's heavyweights, man. Heavyweights are fun to bet on. I mean,
and it's just hard betting.
You can lose your shirt too, but
yeah, which I have. I'm actually way up right now.
Way up.
I'm highest I've ever. The highest total money I've had in my account from a lot of it was from the tank bet. I netted quite a lot from that 8th round tank bet, but I've been on a nice little run. Especially, I've been betting a lot of baseball lately. Really? Yankees have not been winning a lot of games, but when they do win, I bet on them.
I was getting raked over the coals about
they the stink right now.
Yesterday,
I know. Like they're one of the worst teams in baseball over the last month. Like I can't even believe it.
New York franchises, man.
Brutal. I know everyone wants to laugh at us as New Yorkers. We're not going to find any sympathy out there.
No.
It's been a rough run. We haven't had a championship, and they said 100-plus seasons if you combined all the 4 major sports.
Listen, I'm a New Yorker, obviously, but you know now I'm a South Florida transplant, and we got hockey. We're doing good in hockey down here.
South Florida hockey is wild. The fact that you guys were playing hockey in late June down there in the Stanley Cup Finals is pretty nuts. We'll end on this quickly. Canelo Alvarez is back in the news. He is. The Canelo sweepstakes is heating up for his September fight, and it's down to two opponents, one of which is not David Benavidez. It's either Edgar Berlanga or it's Chris Eubank Jr., who somehow hopped into this process. I've heard rumors that it's not going to be September 14th because of UFC's plans to do a fight at the Sphere. The Eubank stuff is crazy. I would say Eubank is the favorite for a late September fight with Canelo. It's not making fans happy because they want to see Benavidez. Eubank somewhat interests me. It interests me more than Berlanga. But, you know, it's just Canelo doing Canelo things at this point.
I feel bad. You know, Berlanga's my guy. And I like the idea of the Puerto Rican-Mexican clash. You know, I always like that. I think that it's you got a built-in fan base on both sides who are rabid about their guys. And Berlanga is a good-looking, hard-punching guy. He's young. He's got that youthful vitality. He's feeling very confident about this. You know, we saw him in Vegas when, you know, they were kind of basically announcing, but he just keeps getting pushed over. You know, like, he was supposed to be him in May, and then it turns out to be Jaime Munguia. And they're like, okay, well, now they're going to push Edgar to September. And now in comes, you know, the dark horse, you know, Chris Eubank Jr., who, you know, athletically is good. He can punch. He's fought at 68 before, but has been campaigning at 60. I don't know. He's also 34 years old. So I have a feeling it's going to be Eubank.
Yeah, and there's a lot of elements to it. Like, Eubank overseas, like in the UK, I think could be an interesting wrinkle on this.
It's huge.
It's very big. Canelo has said he wants to fight in the UK. It's something different. I think the fans over there would mob him. You know, reminds me of when Tyson went over to the UK and did his little run over there when he was suspended in the US, and he was mobbed. I don't think he'll get mobbed to that degree because Tyson's a whole different beast. But that's what, like, it's come to now at this stage in Canelo's career, where he's running out of opponents, viable opponents, not named David Benavidez. He's cleared out a lot of the bigger names. So you kind of have to say, oh, I'll fight Eubank, but let's do it in the UK. So there's like a little wrinkle to it. But that's not the case with this fight. Like, I haven't heard anything about this fight being in the UK. I've heard it's going to be in Amazon Prime, PPV.com, Las Vegas. And I'm just a little curious because I'm a big Canelo guy. You are too. Like, you know, he's one of the faces of boxing. But it's like, you might get pushed off of your date because you're not fighting David Benavidez. Like, if you were fighting David Benavidez September 14th, that's bigger than UFC. That's bigger than UFC.
Yeah,
go ahead. That's bigger than the Sphere.
Yeah,
that, right, that, like, you might make UFC move, but since you're not, for the second year in a row, and you're not, you may potentially not be fighting on Mexican Independence Weekend, which is a much bigger weekend than Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo is a made up holiday, like, for us gringos. Like, September 14th is, or 15th is, that's Mexican fighting. That's a huge Mexican weekend of fighting. And now it's 2 years in a row, potentially, where he's not fighting on that weekend. And another fight where it's not what the public wants. So it's not going to be Benavidez. So I guess we just have to, like, Berlanga, it doesn't really, like, interest me too much. But I understand the marketing, like you said. Like,
yeah.
They can market
it's
the hell
just,
out
it's
of
tough for Berlanga because he's so young. He's just not, he's not there yet, you know, to be able to. It's almost like how Jaime Munguia was a good opponent, right? But he just wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to be in the ring with the kind of guy like Canelo. And you saw that. You saw Canelo's class in that fight and his ability to control the pace and control the action and set up shots, no problem. You know, I don't know if Berlanga is going to be any different in that sense, because he just hasn't been in the kind of fights. There's no one who has as much experience in the world as Canelo Alvarez.
He's almost 70 fights.
70 fights, and how many world champions has he fought? You know, he's been doing this.
21 or 22.
Yeah, it's crazy. So
especially what we're seeing from him lately is, like, the power is
still there.
Not what it used to be. It's still there, but it's not what it used to be, so he's way more, like, intelligent in there.
Yeah.
Right. And Munguia looks like an outstanding opponent compared to Eubank and Berlanga.
Yeah, and he didn't really have anything for Canelo. I mean, he did for around two and a half rounds, and then after that, it was just all Canelo.
Like, I'm curious if Eubank hopped into this discussion because Berlanga maybe outpriced himself. Canelo just went, all right, I'll find someone else. And now maybe Berlanga will come back to the table, lower his price, which...
I feel like Eubank's been trying to get into the Canelo sweepstakes for a while. I mean, everyone has, but, like, I feel like he's thrown his hat in the mix over a couple of years. I wonder how the fans are reacting, because it seems like Canelo does have his ear to the ground, and he does listen when his opponents are being discussed and who he's going to eventually choose. I don't know. It's an interesting time. Canelo does what he wants, man. Canelo is the definition of F you, pay me. He is just, yes, he does whatever he wants.
Now.
Yeah, he does whatever he wants. F you, pay me. Oh, you're going to take that weekend? Cool. I'll just move it 2 weeks later and fight.
It's always been like that.
Guys, I'm going to bring guys who aren't even in the weight class. I'm going to bring guys who are not ranked.
Bro, it's gotten to the point where it's so obvious now. It's like he really, really is not even trying to hide it. It's like I'm the face of boxing. And there was this discussion about Gervonta Davis hopping into that discussion. It's still Canelo. I mean, he's still producing the highest pay-per-views. He's still that guy. He's still producing huge gates. He's still making news, whatever he says. So, yeah, he can literally fight Berlanga and Eubank, probably do a baseline of 350,000 to 400,000 pay-per-views from just his fan base, and go from there. With Eubank, it's potentially bringing in a UK crowd. It's potentially that's the only reason
Think. Awesome fans.
Great fans. I don't know where they stand on Eubank. You know, he is coming off of that win over Liam Smith in the rematch.
Well, I think he's like really, really popular. I mean, obviously he's got the namesake of his father, but I think
he is popular.
He's been around for a long time. You know, he's a legitimate, you know, world champion. You know, it was kind of crazy when he got knocked out by Liam Smith, but then the way he came back.
I felt like it was a little fluky.
Especially because he's shown a great chin his whole career. That was very strange.
If he would have got the Ben fight and knocked him out, his star would have been huge. Then this would have made a little more sense, but didn't get that fight, obviously, for the reasons we know. And I see him a lot in Vegas. Like, whenever he's always at the top ranked gym, Eubank, working out. So he might be over here. I don't know. We'll see. You have to figure it's going to be announced soon because we're already in July. And around this time last year is when Canelo kind of shocked everyone to say that he's fighting Charlo, not Jermall. It's Jermell. That was the first week of July. So.
Wow, man. That was a year ago today. I remember us doing the shows about that. Wow. Yeah. It's been a year. Time flies, man.
I was in Chicago for a NASCAR trip with John Boy Media when I saw Canelo Charlo. And I did
John
like,
Boy
okay.
Media. Oh,
John
wow.
Boy Media. And I did like, okay, Canelo's fighting Charlo. And then I did a double take, like a legitimate double take when I was Jermell.
Wrong guy.
Yeah. Wrong guy. Yeah, so. We're going on a year of that with Canelo. That is our episode this week. Should be a fun weekend with Boots Ennis returning to the ring, Chocolatito getting in there, pro box action, a whole bunch of stuff, summertime in full effect. Whoever's heading out to the fights in AC, or excuse me, in AC, I wish AC, in Philly, let us know how it looks in there, what the arena is going to look like. I'm interested. I'll be tuned in to see this Boots fight and see what he's got. See what this arena looks like, to see what Matchroom. This is big for Matchroom USA. Like, this is a big time signing for them. Like,
yes,
potentially have the number one pound for pound fighter.
Yeah, so. No, huge, huge signing. And you know, we talked about how they're willing to go to places. They build Arizona into like a fight, like a legitimate fight town. Like, now, you know, if they can do that with Philly, that's an awesome idea.
Yes. Everyone, enjoy your weekend. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay classy, San Diego. Goodbye.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.